Hello and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. It is Tuesday, July 27, and I'm your reader, Kathleen. Tomorrow's heat will be rare in Cedar Rapids. The current forecast for Wednesday features a high of 95 with heat index readings likely that will exceed 100 for a big chunk of the day. Too hot for strenuous outdoor activities, so please be careful. The last time that the Eastern Iowa Airport reached an air temperature of 95 or above was May 28 of 2018, when it hit that mark exactly. It was a two-day event then, with the day before reaching 97. We've seen 23 days at 95 or above in the last 10 years, but that stat is misleading. 15 of those 23 were in the very hot and extremely dry year of 2012. The normal rate is around 2 days each year, and that's by meteorologist Corey Thompson. Our normal high today is 85, and normal low is 64. The record high for today was set in 1930, and that was 104 degrees. Record low was set in 1937 at 48. Slight chance of storms this afternoon, with a high expected of 92. From the front page of the Gazette today, the VA will require workers to get vaccine. Most staff at the Iowa City VA already are fully vaccinated. The Department of Veterans Affairs, which runs one of the nation's largest health systems, announced Monday it would mandate coronavirus vaccines for its frontline workers, becoming the first federal agency to do so and signaling what some experts said could be a national pivot to such requirements. Faced with the explosive growth of the new virus variant, the state of California and the city of New York also rolled out similar mandates. And an array of hospitals from coast to coast, including the prestigious Mayo Clinic, declared they would require staff to get vaccinated following a joint plea from the nation's major medical groups. Healthcare leaders say the moves represent an escalation of the nation's fight against coronavirus, the first concerted effort to mandate that tens of millions of Americans get vaccinated more than 7 months after regulators authorized the shots and as new cases rip through the nation. The VA's mandate applies to more than 100,000 frontline workers, including physicians, dentists, podiatrists, and registered nurses. The VA said in its announcement that its employees would receive 4 hours of paid leave after demonstrating they have been vaccinated. At the VA healthcare system in Iowa City, which provides healthcare to the over 180,000 veterans living in the 50 counties it serves in eastern Iowa, western Illinois, and northern Missouri, about 95% of the staff already is fully vaccinated, spokeswoman Janelle Beswick said. A VA online chart shows that 1,828 employees of the system, which also operates 10 clinics in cities including Coralville and Cedar Rapids, are fully vaccinated. Veterans Affairs Secretary Dennis McDonough said in a statement that the safety of veterans had driven the decisions as new infections, fueled by the infectious Delta variant surge around the country. Since the pandemic began, we have tragically lost tens of thousands of veterans to this deadly disease, said the VA spokesman, Randall Noller. This action is aimed at ensuring that we are doing everything we can to protect our veterans and the system that serves them. The VA directive, which gives employees 8 weeks to comply, is in line with vaccination requirements that other healthcare systems and hospitals have implemented, Noller added, citing a joint statement released Monday from nearly 60 medical groups calling for all health workers to be vaccinated against the coronavirus. The statement, issued by many groups urging a mandate for the first time, represents an increasingly tough stance by the medical and public health establishment amid the sluggish pace of national vaccines. Early this month, Mercy One announced that staff at its facilities across Iowa will be required to receive a COVID-19 vaccine by this fall. That includes hospitals and associated medical clinics. At Mercy One Dubuque, Mercy One Dyersville, Mercy One Clinton, Mercy One North Iowa, and Mercy One Western. However, the state's largest hospital, the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, has said it will not require that its staff be vaccinated. Confirmed coronavirus infections nationally have nearly quadrupled in July, from about 13,000 cases per day at the start of the month to now more than 50,000, according to the Post's tracking. But many workers in the health field remain unvaccinated, despite having prior access to coronavirus vaccines, which first became available in December. More than 38% of nursing home staff were not fully vaccinated as of July 11, despite caring for patients at elevated risk, according to data collected by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and analyzed by Leading Age, which represents nonprofit nursing homes and other providers. Health leaders said that the slowed pace of vaccinations, coupled with the surging threat of the Delta variant, compelled them to act. "We feel that it's important to sign our name to this," said Rachel Villanueva, an OBGYN, with the president of the National Medical Association, which represents more than 50,000 black physicians and is calling for a vaccine mandate for the first time. Villanueva added that new coronavirus cases could disproportionately affect frontline workers, many of whom are African American, and communities of color that continue to lag behind whites on vaccination rates. We want to continue to dispel myths, educate, increase confidence, and increase vaccination rates in our communities," she said. About 60% of all U.S. adults are fully vaccinated, with the rate of new immunizations slowing since mid-April, according to the Post's tracking. Iowa's rate is lower. Nearly 47% of all Iowans have been vaccinated as of last Wednesday, the last time state public health officials provided an update. I'll abbreviate that story to move on. New memory care center set for Northeast Cedar Rapids. This story by Michaela Ram. A new senior living community that employs a home-like model of care for those with memory loss will be built in Northeast Cedar Rapids later this year. Unity Point Health Cedar Rapids is partnering with a Cedar Falls-based senior living company, Western Home Services, to construct the cottages at Unity Point Way. The $25 million project at 8405 Council Street Northeast in Cedar Rapids will break ground in the fall of 2021. The facility is expected to open in late 2022. With an anticipated growth of 18.3% in the 65-plus age demographic in the Cedar Rapids area, this community will provide much-needed memory dementia care housing, said Michelle Nierman, Unity Point Health Cedar Rapids president and chief executive officer. The cottages at Unity Point Way includes construction of three freestanding memory care cottages with 16 to 20 units each. These facilities use a specific care model that creates an environment prompting a household way of life for individuals with dementia, Alzheimer's disease, or otherwise deal with memory loss, officials say. The whole goal was to create an environment that allows our residents to live with dementia just as full a life as possible for as long as possible, Western Home Services CEO Chris Hansen said. These secure, home-like settings will include a private bedroom and bathroom for each resident. It also will have a common area with a kitchen where residents can prepare meals and have other activities to the degree to which they are able, Hansen said. Residents also will be able to set their own schedules, going to bed and eating meals on their own time. Staff in the cottages, which are led by a household coordinator, also functions like a household, Hansen said. Instead of having seven different disciplines, housekeeping, dietary, things like that, this group really does a little bit of everything, Hansen said. It functions more like a family in a household would, where they are all participating. There's no job that's not theirs. Western Home Services, which owns and operates senior living communities across Iowa, first developed and opened two cottages using the household model in Cedar Falls. Those facilities opened in June 2015. Western Home Services has a 150-acre flagship campus in Cedar Falls, where the company houses about 1,100 residents. The cottages at Unity Point Way will be located next to St. Luke's Transitional Care Center, a skilled nursing and rehabilitation facility for patients recovering from an injury, surgery, or serious illness. Even as new senior living centers and long-term care facilities are opened in eastern Iowa and across the state, industry leaders say these facilities are dealing with critical shortage in direct care workers and other staff. According to the federal data compiled by AARP, 23.5% of long-term care facilities in Iowa were experiencing a shortage of nurses and aides in June. Data shows that shortage has been growing in recent months. There's no bigger thing on my or this organization's radar right now than this issue, Hansen said. Hansen said his company is working with Unity Point Health Cedar Rapids to offer a good benefits package to entice workers. However, he said their focus has been on determining how to provide staff the flexibility they want in their roles while maintaining quality of care for residents. We just got to figure out how to be more flexible and meet people where they're at and to the degree possible, but we also have such regulatory constraints and fiscal constraints, Hansen said, makes it a challenge. But at the end of the day, as Iowa's population continues to age, Hansen said they simply need more people joining this profession. There's no silver bullet to this, and it's going to be hard work, he said. Turning now to the Iowa Today page, residents safely escape a North Liberty fire. This story by Lee Hermiston. All occupants safely escaped a North Liberty fire on Sunday. According to a city news release, the North Liberty Fire Department was called to a fire at 2:13 p.m. Sunday at 1557 Burr Drive. Authorities said neighbors had discovered a fire outside of the home and alerted the residents. Crews knocked down the fire, which spread through the eaves and into the attic of the townhouse. It was brought under control within 26 minutes of firefighters arriving on scene. A cat also was rescued. The home sustained extensive fire and smoke damage, but a loss estimate is not yet available. The cause of the fire remains under investigation. The Red Cross is assisting occupants with their needs, the city said. The North Liberty Fire Department was assisted by the Coralville, Solon, Swisher, Iowa City, and Tiffin Fire Departments. North Liberty Police, Johnson County Ambulance, MidAmerican Energy, Hodge Construction, and the Johnson County Emergency Communications Center. And a man faces up to 54 years for sexual abuse of a woman. This by Trish Mahaffey. A Cedar Rapids man was found guilty last week for repeatedly sexually assaulting a 19-year-old woman who was incapacitated, and video recording incidents outside a downtown Iowa City bar and in a hotel, November 18, 2018. A Johnson County jury, following a week-long trial, found Carlos Allen Jevento, age 34, guilty of 5 felony charges of third-degree sexual abuse and 2 counts of invasion of privacy, both aggravated misdemeanors. The jury deliberated about 5 hours, according to court documents. Jevento faces up to 54 years in prison. Some of the sexual abuse charges could merge, which would lessen his prison time. According to testimony, the 19-year-old woman said she had been drinking with friends at home and then went downtown to a bar. She wasn't aware Jevento was recording the sex acts with his cell phone in an apartment stairwell next to the Fieldhouse Bar on the Ped Mall, or that those acts even happened. The woman didn't remember most of the incidents, only that she woke up with him on top of her at the Iowa House Hotel on the University of Iowa campus that night. There was video evidence from his phone of the sexual assaults. According to the complaint, the woman was visibly incapacitated in the video and couldn't give consent. The defense argued the woman consented to the sexual acts. Jevento also is charged with possession of contraband in a correctional facility and possession of a controlled substance, which stemmed from the sexual abuse case. When Jevento was taken to the Johnson County Jail, deputies discovered a powdery substance in one of his shirt pockets, according to a complaint. Police said it tested positive for cocaine. This investigation led to 3 other women accusing him of similar incidents of sexual assaults that occurred before the offenses for which he was just convicted. He faces 3 additional third-degree sexual abuse charges and 3 trials. And also on the Iowa Today page, DeWitt asking RAGBRAI writers, "Can you handle us?" This story by Sarah Watson. Quad City Times DeWitt resident Tom Tiefenthaler got his first glimpse of his future hometown on RAGBRAI in 1994, the last time the route passed through the city. "I was never in DeWitt before in my life," Tiefenthaler recalled. Years later, he moved to the eastern Iowa town because it was close to his business and realized his first trip to where he'd eventually raise 3 children actually was by bike. "I remember coming into town, and I remember all the memories were great. The South Side and TC's pizza had something going on. Later on, I put it all together, but that day, it was just great memories of DeWitt." This year, Tiefenthaler, a longtime biker, has been busy planning for months with dozens of other volunteers to set up entertainment, beverage gardens, and logistics for DeWitt's first overnight stop on what is frequently called the biggest mobile party in Iowa. On Friday night, DeWitt will swell with people on bikes traversing the state for the Register's annual Great Bike Ride Across Iowa after the riders' Thursday stop in Anamosa, and the planning committee has main stage entertainment planned, local food vendors scattered across town, and a beverage garden with cocktails, beer, and non-alcoholic drinks. The 7-day, 426-mile route will finish Saturday in Clinton. DeWitt leaders were approached late 2020 by RAGBRAI organizers to host the last overnight stop, meaning the town would need to set up camping and prepare food and entertainment for thousands of hungry, thirsty bikers with dollars to boost local businesses. Maquoketa, just 19 miles north, decided to bow out of the rescheduled 2021 tour because the dates conflicted with a major road project scheduled for this year and the county fair, Interim City Administrator Mallory Smith said. DeWitt leaders held public meetings and discussions with the City Council, City Administrator Steve Linder said, to see how much interest businesses, not-for-profits, and the chamber held in helping come up with everything needed to host the riders. Feedback was positive, he said, and the city agreed to do it, forming a nonprofit called RAGBRAI Incorporated. Lindner said city leaders thought this was a chance for local businesses to snap back after a pandemic year of limited retail shopping and in-person dining. "With 15 to 20,000 additional people coming through your town," he said, "businesses are bound to see benefits." "We think it's going to be a big deal," Lindner said. The statewide RAGBRAI organization paid DeWitt $15,000 for expenses, such as added law enforcement, and offered $15,000 to be set aside for not-for-profit grants to be a host city. Once DeWitt got the green light, volunteers on an executive planning committee started meeting weekly to plan how the town of 5,200 people would entertain and accommodate, quadrupling in size overnight. But hosting an overnight stop requires hundreds of volunteers, an estimated 800, the DeWitt Observer reported. Organizers say the biggest need for volunteers is on the late-night beverage garden shifts. As of Monday, the group still was looking for volunteers 21 and older to work in the evening until after midnight for cleanup. Moving now to the inside page, the guest editorial today is a reprint from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, "Vaccine Requirements Win in Court." This is from Sunday's St. Louis Post. A federal judge has ruled that Indiana University has every right to require coronavirus vaccinations before students may return to class. The ruling is based on precedent as well as common sense. It should boggle the minds of smart-thinking people everywhere why educational institutions shouldn't insist on defending the use of science and knowledge to combat the coronavirus and the blatant ignorance associated with vaccine denial. It never made sense that educational institutions can require vaccinations for polio, rubella, tetanus, and other life-threatening diseases, yet somehow the deadly and contagious disease in our midst should be out of bounds for vaccination requirements. Colleges and universities around the country are refusing to buckle under conservative anti-vaccine pressure, and a ruling by U.S. District Judge Damon Lichty should boost their resolve. Indiana University announced that starting with the fall semester, all students, faculty, and staff must be fully vaccinated before being allowed back on campus. Students who fail to do so would have their class registration and campus facilities access cards canceled. Faculty and staff would lose their jobs. Working remotely without complying with the vaccine requirement is not an option, the university says. The university issued an application for religious, ethical, and medical exemptions. 8 students challenged the rule in court, but Lichty denied their request for an injunction. The student's lawyer compared the vaccination policy to the Tuskegee study in which black men were deliberately exposed to syphilis. Lichty, an appointee of then-President Donald Trump, rejected the comparison outright. Coronavirus vaccines protect people from disease rather than expose them to it. The ruling is consistent with other court decisions favoring common-sense precautions over assertions that people should be free to do what they want, regardless of the consequences. In Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis tried to impose a state law banning businesses from imposing vaccination mandates on their customers. A federal appeals panel ruled that Florida law cannot supersede federal government mandates when it comes to protecting public health. The choice of whether to be vaccinated remains with the individual, but vaccine deniers deserve to pay an increasingly high price for their recklessness, including being banned from cruise ships and universities. And again, that's a reprint from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. The guest column today is by Norbert Michael, titled, Inflation is Real, but Don't Panic Yet. For 3 consecutive months, the Consumer Price Index has revealed above-average annual inflation rates not seen since 2008. Understandably, Americans are nervous. Prices are rising and the Federal Reserve was caught by surprise. Many of the same public officials who have for years insisted that inflation should be higher are now scrambling to assure Americans the inflation spike is temporary. At the same time, multiple Federal Reserve officials have expressed the desire to let inflation rise until labor market problems clear up. But unemployment still is hovering at 6%. And the number of people employed remains well below pre-pandemic levels. Nobody should be surprised if most Americans are being skeptical of trusting central bankers. It is abundantly clear the Consumer Price Index is being pushed up by several spending categories where demand took a dive during the pandemic. Prices for hotel stays, airfares, and restaurant meals, for example, have accounted for a large part of the recent consumer price index increase. And while the core consumer price index also has been on the rise, used car and truck prices are responsible for much of that increase. Labor market problems, driven largely by government policies, make it more difficult for businesses to deliver the goods to their customers, and they contribute to inflationary pressures. So while inflation fears are perfectly understandable, there still is good reason to believe that things will soon get back to normal. One recent survey, for example, suggests more than 2 million workers currently receiving unemployment insurance benefits expect to be back in the labor market by the end of the year. And all things considered, it is somewhat unreasonable to expect everything to snap right back to a pre-pandemic economy without some hiccups. Regardless, it would not help current members or matters of the Federal Reserve to start fighting inflation by shrinking the money supply, tightening its policy stance. All of this market turmoil follows massive amounts of federal deficit spending. Prior to President Joe Biden's recent $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief package, the federal government had already increased the national debt by $4.5 trillion in 2020. The $1.9 trillion package even drew a rebuke from former Obama advisor Lawrence Summers, who pointed out that this World War II-sized stimulus could have inflationary pressure of a kind we have not seen in a generation. The Biden administration's answer was, of course, two new spending proposals totaling an additional $4.5 trillion. And now Congress is flirting with yet another $4 trillion spending plan. These spending plans provide funds for buying all kinds of things, but they do nothing to address the underlying structural problems that are driving up prices. People have good reason to worry about inflation from too many dollars chasing too few goods. If Congress and the administration fail to get federal spending under control, three consecutive abnormally high consumer price index reports will be the least of Americans' concerns. Norbert Michael is a research fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and this column was previously published by Inside Sources. One community letter today titled Thoughts on Changes to the Gazette. As someone who has read the Gazette since childhood, I've seen many changes over the years, some good, some not so good. I'm also well aware of the hard times local news sources have fallen upon and how they've had to alter the way they do things in order to survive and thrive. It's for that reason that a few changes the Gazette has made in the past years have bothered me. The first was letting go of columnist Liz Lenz. She was and still is a vital voice for those who are politically left of center and was a voice for many women that simply cannot be filled by anyone else. Second, and more recently, was the Gazette's decision, in the name of efficiency, to cease porch delivery of the newspaper for some who don't have a paper box at the end of their drive. I shudder to think how hard it's going to be this winter for many people to find their newspaper in a drifted over drive that hasn't yet been plowed after an overnight snowstorm. Lastly, it's a shame the Gazette has decided to sell its printing press and outsource its printing operations to a company over 2 hours away. I'm not sure how this is going to improve delivery efficiency in times when newspapers are struggling to keep subscribers and entice new ones to survive. I don't see how any of these changes are going to help the Gazette attain that goal. And that is signed today by Lori Morris of Hiawatha. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Tuesday, July 27, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now we turn to today's obituaries. In the short notices, first from Decorah, Terry Owen Thronson, age 59, died Friday, June 18. Fjellstoll Funeral Home in Decorah is in charge. In Iowa City, Thomas, known as Tom R. Teffley, age 85, died Saturday, July 24. Lansing Funeral and Cremation Service, Iowa City. In Kelowna, Larry Cox, age 82, died Friday, July 23. Yoder Powell Funeral Home, Kelowna. In Maquoketa, Brian Henning, age 45, died Saturday, July 24. Carson Celebration of Life Center, Maquoketa. And in New Albany, Jody Lynn Bowman Stoltman, age 63, of Winona, Minnesota, formerly of New Albany, died Tuesday, June 29. Martin Grau Funeral Home, Waukon, is in charge. And moving to the regular notices, first from Anamosa, Danielle Marie Wiedemann ended her journey on earth and sailed away to heaven on July 24, listening to Come Sail Away in her mom's arms. She began her journey June 12, 1983, in Heidelberg, Germany, born to Carl Wiedemann and Ruth Ann Mosser. Danielle's journey began with so many obstacles, spina bifida and hydrocephalus, and ended with a strength that only the Lord and Grandma could provide to her as she fought metastatic bladder cancer for 13 months. Those just described the medical issues that Danielle handled with grace and grit her entire life. A celebration of life will be held Monday, August 2, from 5 to 9 at the Wapsie Country Club, located within the Wapsipinicon Park, her park as she called it. Please dress in your favorite rock and roll, tie-dye, or Danielle's groupies shirt and listen to music reminisce and celebrate the life that was cut short, but lived with love and laughter. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the family. In Cedar Rapids, Marion E., known as Marty Himes, age 84, passed away Sunday, July 25. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, July 30, at Squaw Creek Baptist Church in Marion, with Pastor James Perry officiating. Visitation will be from 9:30 a.m. until service time at the church. Burial will be in the Clarence Cemetery with military honors. From Cedar Rapids, Evelyn Hadsel Keller, age 104 of Cedar Rapids, died Saturday, July 24. Visitation will be held from 9:30 to 11 Saturday, July 31 at Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home. Graveside services will follow the visitation at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. From Monticello, Dale J. Zimmerman, age 70, passed away at his home Saturday, July 24, after a brief illness, surrounded by his loving family as he made his final journey. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, July 30, at St. Matthew Lutheran Church in Monticello. Pastor David Ramish will officiate. Burial will be at Oakwood Cemetery, Monticello. Friends may call from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday at Getch Funeral Home, Monticello. Thoughts, memories, and condolences may be left at the funeral home website. From Cedar Rapids, Stephen Leroy Mooney, age 82, died Saturday, July 24 at Unity Point Transitional Care. Visitation will be held from 9 to 10 a.m. Thursday, July 29 at Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service, where a funeral service will follow at 10 a.m. Interment with military honors will take place at Linwood Cemetery. A live stream of the funeral service may be accessed on the funeral home website tribute page for him under photos and videos or media starting at 10 a.m. Thursday, July 29. In Coralville, Elizabeth Ann, known as Betty Heron Adams, formerly of Monticello, passed away from natural causes on July 22 at the age of 91. It was important for Betty to read her Bible and devotions. Chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes was her most meaningful. She often challenged family and friends, dare to be a Daniel. The family wishes to thank Windmill Manor for their care, and a private service is being planned. From Van Horn, Larry Robert Dietrich, age 77, passed away Sunday, July 25, at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House in Hiawatha, with his family by his side. Private family graveside services will be held at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. A celebration of Larry's life will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, July 28, at the Keystone Turner Hall. A memorial fund has been established. From Iowa City, Levi T. Rundlett, age 4 of Iowa City, died Wednesday evening, July 21, after battling cancer for more than a year. He died at home with his parents, Beth and Zach, holding him and loving him through his next journey. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, July 31 at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Hills, with burial to follow at the Lone Tree Cemetery and luncheon at Lone Tree American Legion. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday at the Gay and Chia Funeral and Cremation Service in Iowa City. A memorial fund has been established to assist families having a similar journey in their lives. To share a thought, memory, or condolence, please visit the funeral home website, gayandchia.com. From Iowa City, Tammy Lee Gaskell, age 60, passed from life on Saturday, July 24, at home, surrounded by her mother, Kay Gaskell, and sisters, Kim and Amy. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. until 12:30 p.m. Thursday, July 29, at Gay and Chia Funeral and Cremation Service, followed by a time of family and friends sharing memories beginning at 12:30. There will be a time of fellowship and refreshments following this time and prior to burial at Oakland Cemetery in Iowa City. From Swisher, G. Novak, age 77, of Swisher, passed away at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House on July 25. A private memorial service will be held for the immediate family at the Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center. From North English, Edward Murray Hall, born March 9, 1954, in Sigourney, passed away Sunday, July 25, at Mercy, Iowa City, at the age of 67. A celebration of life will be held from 2 to 3, Thursday, July 29, at the Knoll Ridge Country Club in North English. Messages and tributes may be left at the Powell Funeral Home website. And lastly, from Des Moines, Elaine Beverly Weedy, born December 8, 1931, in Fredericksburg, Iowa, passed away Saturday, July 24. Services and interment will be held at 1:30 p.m. Thursday, July 29, at Woodridge Cemetery near Tipton. There will be a reception at Buchanan House Winery, Tipton, after the burial. Memorial donations may be made to the Animal Rescue League of Iowa, Des Moines location. Condolences may be expressed at www.hamiltonsfuneralhome.com. Moving now to the sports page, dominated by boys baseball. First, this story by K.J. Pilcher. Stallman and Pirates stomp onward. Albernette coach Ryan Stensland called it electric. Hunter Caves said it was a moonshot and wondered if it had landed yet. Pirates senior Reed Stallman's home run was finished by an emphatic foot stomp on home plate after it cleared the scoreboard behind the right field fence. As soon as I hit it, I knew, Stallman said. It felt so good to get it done for my team. We needed every single run tonight. His three-run blast and six total RBIs helped propel sixth-seeded Albernette to an 8-6 victory over number 2 Tri-Center in a Class 1A state baseball quarterfinal last night at Merchants Park. A great effort by our guys, Stensland said. I'm extremely proud of them. Stallman was 2-for-3 and reached on an error. The Pirates' offense had stalled slightly when he stepped to the plate in the fifth. Gavin Sokup reached on one of his two singles while Andrew Osman walked. His blast provided some breathing room with a four-run advantage. Big-time players making big-time plays, Stensland said. That described Reed. Stallman was also involved in a key play in the seventh. Caves reached on an RBI single to score. Sokup stole second and advanced to third on a throwing error. And to abbreviate the story to make room for others, the Pirates advanced to the state semifinals for the second time in three seasons, placing second in 2019. They face second-seeded Council Bluffs St. Albert, 33-8, at noon on Wednesday. And Lisbon gains experience. This story by K.J. Pilcher. No Lion Seniors means loss to St. Albert stings a little less. The end of the season didn't hit Lisbon coach John Tasinski in quite the same way. The Lions' season came to a close Monday, but he wasn't as emotional wishing farewell to seniors. There were none on the roster. So the prospects for next season are promising. After the 9-3 loss to second-seeded Council Bluffs St. Albert in the Class 1A state baseball quarterfinal at Merchants Park, it stinks in the moment when you're losing and not moving on, Tasinski said. I'm happy because we have a lot of good baseball ahead of us. If they continue to work hard again, I feel we should be in good shape to make another deep run to state. The Lions finished 25-14 and surpassed each of the last two seasons. They went from first-round postseason exits to district and sub-state champions, making the school's eighth state appearance and first since a 2018 runner-up performance. I'm excited for next year, Lisbon's Hunter Clark said. It stings right now, but we'll remember this feeling. We'll be back next year. We'll stay in the cages getting better. We just have to clean some stuff up and keep getting better. Lisbon stood toe-to-toe with the Falcons early. Tyson Scott singled to lead off the game and scored on a wild pitch for a 1-0 lead. The Lions added another in the second when Alex Bach scored on a Dylan Brayton fielder's choice, tying the game at 2-2. Our kids battled, Tesinski said. They hit the ball and made plays when needed. And this story by K.J. Pilcher, Key holds on and topples New London. Hawks add another chapter to the program with a long history. Lansing Key owns one of the most storied baseball programs in the state. The Hawks haven't added to that rich tradition since 2011 when they reached the state title game for the 16th time. Tyson Cota was a young bat boy on that team. Now he helped Key return for the first time in a decade and started in the program's 20th state appearance. It was fun as a bat boy and just to be there, but to play in the games and experience the state tournament is awesome, Cota said. It's a really good feeling. Fourth-seeded Key received strong outings from Cota and Dalton Dibbert on the mound, capitalized on a few New London miscues, and held off the fifth-seeded Tigers 4-3 in a Class 1A quarterfinal Monday at Merchants Park. It got closer than it needed to, but it was a really fun game, said Cota, who pitched 3 1/3 innings and earned the win. It's always a fun time at state tournament. The Hawks face top-seeded Remsen St. Mary's 27-3 in Wednesday's semifinal. The Hawks beat Grundy Center 14-0 in 5 innings. Turning now to the community page, here are some things to do today. Museum exhibit York Wright Freemasonry. The story continues. This exhibit shows the history of the York Wright, one of the appended bodies of Freemasonry. Trace the history of the Royal Arch, the Cryptic Rite, and the Knights Templar from the late 18th century to the present day. That takes place from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Iowa Masonic Library and Museum, 813 First Avenue Southeast in Cedar Rapids, and that is free. In the family and hobby category, do-it-your-way crafts, prepackaged crafts for kids. Do the craft with the group outside the library or take it home. In case of heavy rain or severe weather, the event will be canceled, but crafts may still be picked up. That's from 10 to 10:30 a.m. at the Ely Public Library, and again, that's free. In the food and community category, Field to Families Online Farmers Market is occurring weekly in Iowa City. The order period is noon on Tuesday through noon on Wednesday, weekly at orders.fieldtofamily.org, and pickup is Saturday morning at the Johnson County Health and Human Services parking ramp in Iowa City, and of course, cost varies for those items. In the gardening category, Food for the Food, Introduction to Composting. This workshop is a fun, interactive introduction to composting and vital soil science principles. More than half the resources we discard in landfills are the food and paper waste ingredients for potential plant food. We'll learn about affordable methods, recipes, and designs easily used at home, school, or work. That takes place today from 3 to 4 p.m. at the Hiawatha Public Library, and the cost is free. In the sports and rec category, Elevate Sports Camp. Children can choose from basketball, soccer, or volleyball, and will learn basic techniques, go through helpful drills, scrimmage, and have fun. More information is available at www.lynncountysports.com. That is at 6 to 8 p.m. at the Gospel Light Baptist Church of Marion, 305 2nd Avenue in Marion, and the cost is free. And lastly, in the family and outdoor fun category, Summer Shorts, Iowa City. The Iowa Children's Museum is heading outside to provide hands-on fun while inspiring participants to continue playing all summer. That takes place from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Kiwanis Park, 1519 Teg Drive, Iowa City, and the cost is free. And also on the community page, this story by John Steppe for the Gazette. New fund seeks to remove barriers to mental health. A new fund aimed at removing barriers to mental health access started this month at Tanager Place. The Cedar Rapids not-for-profit organization, which provides mental health services to children, created its equity fund following a $30,000 donation from Green State Credit Union. "This is something we've been wanting to do for quite a while," said Melissa Walker, Tanager Place's director of philanthropy. "We know that a lack of financial resources is a huge barrier to treatment for mental health." While Green State provided the initial donation, Tanager Place is hoping this ignites philanthropic activity for the fund. "Our goal is that we will never have to turn anybody away due to inability to pay," Walker said. Walker said Tanager Place is noticing an uptick in the need for mental health services among children because of the COVID-19 pandemic. She hopes the start of the Equity Fund means money won't keep these children from receiving the Tanager Place support they need. "There are many low and middle income class families that just don't come because they know it's expensive," Walker said. Tanager Place officially launched the fund on July 1 with the focus on current families receiving support from the not-for-profit organization. "Our clinicians will identify families that may be experiencing barriers to accessing treatment and provide support to those whose needs arise," Walker said. As more funding comes in, Tanager Place will expand the fund to help more families. Green State spokeswoman Tara Wackendorf described Tanager Place as a long-standing provider and supporter of the mental health needs of our corridor kids and families. "The past 18 months have shown us all that caring for our mental health needs is important, and services are something everyone should be able to gain access to when needed," Wackendorf said in a news release. North Liberty-based Green State Credit Union has $7.5 billion in total assets, according to the U.S. National Credit Union Association, which is more than any other credit union or bank with headquarters in Iowa. And here are the Eastern Iowa briefs for today. 4 Eastern Iowa farm families are to be honored at the state fair. 4 farm families will be recipients as recipients of the 2021 Way We Live Award at the Iowa State Fair, which runs from August 12 to 22nd. The Way We Live Award is meant to highlight families whose farm values are derived from hard work and a love of farming. Families will be recognized on the Ann and Bill Riley stage and will receive a prize package of $25. The Wild Brothers Farms of Lansing will be recognized at 11:45 a.m. August 16. The Wild family has been farming in Allamaquis County for more than 110 years and 4 generations. The farm was purchased in 1910 by Edward and Maud. Their son Harris and his wife Evelyn took over later. The farm is now operated by Harris and Evelyn's sons, Richard, Randy, and Robert, and their families. The farm has an Angus cow-calf operation and feedlot with a 40-cow Holstein dairy herd. Farm crops include corn and alfalfa. Each family member has their own job. Family life has revolved the farm for generations, including family ATV, UTV rides, deer hunting camp, and family picnics on the Upper Iowa River that runs through the farm. Next, the Albert Family Farms of Brandon will be honored at 11:45 a.m. August 17. In 1973, Craig Albert took over management of the family farm, and son Jordan did the same for his dad in 2015. The family farm consists of cow-calf pairs and row crops. The family belongs to the Iowa Cattlemen's Association, Iowa Farm Bureau, Iowa Corn Growers Association, and hosts a Thanksgiving meal for anyone in the community and surrounding areas. Next, the Pollen Family Hampshires of Waterloo will be honored at 11:45 a.m. August 19. Ronald and Mary Esther Pollen oversee a 6th-generation family farm consisting of 100 acres that supports a purebred registered Hampshire sheep operation. Ron's grandfather and his 2 sons purchased their first registered Hampshire sheep in 1926 to add to their existing Cheviot and Oxford flock. Ron and Mary Esther raised their 3 children on the farm, and while the ownership and size of the farming operation has changed over the years, Today, the primary focus of the farm is purebred registered Hampshire sheep. And lastly, the McCarter Farm. The McCarter Farm of Mount Pleasant will be honored at 11:45 a.m. August 20. McCarter Family Farms began in 1960 when Dwayne McCarter began farming with his five sons. In 1994, his son Kenneth and Kenneth's wife Brooke purchased the farm and equipment and continued the family tradition of raising hogs and sheep along with growing corn and soybeans. With their four children, the family farm is continuing with the fourth generation. Also recognized will be the Sorensen family of Exira, Aachen Farms of Whalen, and the Sexton family of Rockwell City. For more information on these families or past winners, you can visit iowastatefair.org/participate/the-way-we-live-award. And also on the community page, Marion is to mark the derecho anniversary with events. The City of Marion plans to mark the anniversary of the derecho with a series of events August 10. The events are intended to reflect on the progress that has been made since the storm. The 2020 derecho will be etched in our collective memory not only as the greatest natural disaster in Marion's history, but also one of its finest moments, said Marion Mayor Nicholas Abu Asali. At a time of great hardship, we set aside our differences and did what needed to be done to help our neighbors. We united around a common purpose and our shared humanity, and in turn, we experienced the true power of community. The schedule of events on August 10 includes a community lunch grilled by the Marion Hy-Vee at noon while supplies last, and a canned food drive to benefit the Churches of Marion Food Pantry in City Square Park, as well as a reading of the proclamation and unveiling of a new tree carving by Carve Our Way artist Clint Hennick. At 2 p.m., a ceremonial tree planting in Thomas Park and information about replanting efforts to date and future plans to restore Marion's tree canopy. This will be with Marion's Urban Forestry Division and Trees Forever. At 3:30, there will be a dedication of a derecho-inspired art installation at the atrium of Marion City Hall by local artist Kara Briggs Farmer. From 4 to 6 p.m., future-focused, United Through Recovery social event hosted by Marion Economic Development Corporation, Marion Chamber of Commerce, and Uptown Marion, to reflect on the anniversary of the derecho and take note of the momentum and development activity in the community. It's free to attend. Reservations are required. And from 6 to 8 p.m., Derecho Oral History Readers Theater, presented by the Marion Public Library and Giving Tree Theater, featuring actors reading a selection of oral histories conducted in the spring. Hear recollections from that day and the days following from those with a tie to Marion and a desire to help the community heal. There's limited seating, free to attend, but advanced reservations are required. A Cedar Rapids clinic is offering gift cards to those who get vaccinated. This story by Michaela Ram. Linn County Public Health is offering $50 Walmart gift cards to residents receiving the COVID-19 vaccine at walk-in clinics taking place this week. Public health officials are offering the COVID-19 vaccine to eligible residents 12 years and older at 5 Cedar Rapids Community School District schools through Friday. The gift card offer is one of the first major incentive programs offered locally since the shots have become available. The walk-in clinics set for 1 to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday are planned at 5 locations in Cedar Rapids, on Tuesday at Cleveland Elementary, Wednesday at Harrison Elementary, Thursday at Johnson Steam Academy, and Friday at Van Buren Elementary. Participants will be offered the Pfizer-BioNTech and the Johnson & Johnson vaccines. Anyone under the age of 18 hoping to receive the vaccine must have a parent or guardian present. The first clinic was Monday afternoon at Roosevelt Creative Corridor Business Academy. That does it for the reading of today's Cedar Rapids Gazette for Tuesday, July 27. I've been your reader, Kathleen. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org anytime. Thanks for listening and have a great, safe day.